Hello, you are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 FM. This is Corinne Motokaitis, host of How She Really Does It, where inspiration and possibility meet. I believe there are many valuable lessons to be learned from other people's journeys, and my lifelong quest has been to use inspirational success stories to motivate and empower others to achieve their personal best. This talk show is meant to inspire, empower, entertain, and be a resource. We'd love to hear our listeners' comments about our shows or questions for upcoming guests. Email us by going to our website, www.howshereallydoesit.com, and send us an email. Our past shows are available on our websites or as podcasts from iTunes. We've all heard about the foreclosures in the United States right now, and today's guest, Amy Jackson, discusses her experience with wrongful foreclosure while battling ovarian cancer. She founded Advocate Amy in an effort to help others going through the foreclosure process. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So let's first talk about, let our listeners know about your own personal journey and what happened to you.
Sure. Basically, in the fall of 2006, I started receiving late payment notices from my lender's servicing agent in the mail, basically indicating that we were past due on our mortgage when we had been making the payments on time. So I initially contacted them and sent them, you know, proof of payment, clear checks, et cetera, et cetera. And they told me that it would take about 4 to 6 weeks to research the file, at which time they would update it and everything would be back to normal. And that's not what happened. that sort of kicked off a chain of events that was 2 years of fighting with my lender's servicing agent and ultimately ended with them foreclosing on our property on January 1st of 2008. And then after they foreclosed, I battled them for an additional 9 months or so, and eventually ended up getting the foreclosure reversed.
And at the same time, weren't you going through, you were battling cancer too, right?
Yeah, I had a reoccurrence during the 2 year period. Yes.
And so, what when you so after they foreclosed and then you battled with them, what happened? What was the outcome?
I ended up, once they foreclosed, you know, then we got an eviction notice. And I, at that time, I initially hired an attorney who, you know, they were communicating with the attorneys who were representing the mortgage company, and they were saying, you know, look, we acknowledge that we've made some mistakes. Let's try to work this out. So initially, it was a very friendly vibe that was going back and forth after the foreclosure, surprisingly enough, because they knew that they had made some really serious mistakes and broken some laws, et cetera, et cetera. But then time went on, and we weren't really agreeing, and so then they started eviction proceedings in earnest. And so it was about, I mean, this went, you know, this went on for a few months, and we were about a week, you know, less than a week away from being evicted. We lost our last eviction hearing, and I was, like, in a state of desperation and just frustration. It was a Sunday night, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I just wrote a letter directly to the CEO of my mortgage company explaining all the things that had happened and asking for help, and I got a response within 48 hours, and it was probably another 7 days after that, and they reversed the foreclosure. They rescinded it, so basically everything is, you know, back to normal.
And what were the mistakes that the bank had made?
Well, they just, first of all, they missed, you know, the whole thing started because they were misapplying our payments. And the funny thing about that is that kind of got lost in all this. We never really found out exactly what happened in that regard. And then in terms of when they started filing for foreclosure, when the bank files for foreclosure, they have their attorneys. They have to file certain things with the county that you live in. And there are timelines. For example, they have to send you a letter that correctly states the amount of debt that you owe, you know, how far behind you are, basically. And then, this is in Texas. And then after that, like, I want to say 14 to 21 days later, they have to send an additional notice. They were incorrectly stating the amount of the debt that we owed. They were not sending the notices on time, so they were violating those laws. There were just a lot of procedural guidelines that they were not following. And that happens a lot because, particularly now with the housing crisis, there are so many foreclosures going on, and these law firms basically just spit out these forms. You know, they put in a name and an address, and nobody's really keeping tabs on what's going on. So as a consumer, you really have to be paying attention and know what the laws are in your specific state.
We have Amy Jackson of Advocate Amy on how she really does it with Chrysomoticitis. So when you say they were misapplying your, were you behind in payments or was that a combination? They were misapplying it and you were behind in the payments?
No. Initially, we were not behind in payments. We'd been making all of our payments on time, and they started sending us these notices saying, you know, you're behind in your payments by this amount. And I was like, no, we're not. And so that's when, you know, I sent in copies of cashier's checks, et cetera, et cetera. And then they just continued. At one point during this process when they were doing their quote-unquote research, they sent us something saying that we had filed for bankruptcy when we never filed for bankruptcy. And so that sent things into, you know, another direction. It was just error after error on their part.
Well, and I can imagine, I mean, it's like if you get a statement from the IRS saying that you are in the wrong, like you owe all this, you back taxes and stuff. I mean, were you feeling kind of desperate or like, oh my gosh, you know, they want to foreclose on our house? And I mean, what kind of feeling were you feeling?
Right. It's a really sickening feeling, a very desperate feeling. This is, you know, your home, your family. This is, you know, supposed to be like your safe place. And in addition to that, you're coming, you know, the mortgage company is obviously in a position of power, and it's really difficult to battle someone when you don't really, you know, when this whole thing first started, I didn't know that much about the mortgage industry or the foreclosure process or any of this stuff. So, and it's kind of like, and I didn't know my rights either. So you have somebody that you're trusting is going to give you accurate information, meaning the mortgage company or their servicing agent, and really that's not happening. So once I started gaining more knowledge and once I started figuring out what was going on, I felt more empowered. But it was definitely, I mean, you just feel very, very desperate, and I think you just want it to be over.
Well, because you feel like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and this big institution or this big power is saying I'm doing it wrong. And a lot of times we grow up kind of being told that you need to listen to those that are bigger than you, you know, whether it's
right.
An institution or the government or something.
Right.
And so that can be really scary. And then, of course, when it's so threatening because it's your home, you know, and I think that's why your story is so important, is that to realize that mistakes do happen. And like you made that point about there's so many foreclosures going on right now, and there isn't the personal touch, and there's just spilling out the form. So you really need to be on top of what is happening and what is going on in your situation.
Exactly. You have to take control. The more knowledge, the better. And, you know, it's very easy. There were times when I really wanted to just sort of hide, and that's very common for people. You start getting bombarded with all this mail and phone calls, and people just tend to back away because they don't know what to do. They don't have the information. And so my goal is to, you know, give this information to as many people as possible to realize that there is something that you can do, and you do have rights as a consumer, and if those rights are being violated, you need to stand up and fight for them.
Did you feel like you were going crazy because you had paid the payments, they told you that you hadn't, you had the proof, they told you you had filed for bankruptcy, you hadn't done that? I mean, at some point, were you just kind of like feeling like you were a bit nutty?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because it was just one thing after the other. And then when the bankruptcy thing happened, they said, okay, you know, even if you send in payments, we can't accept the payments from you because we have it on our records that you are in an active bankruptcy status. And I was just like, what is happening? So I almost felt like, okay, are they setting me up here? Like, so I then, you know, I get past due on my payments and then they can foreclose. I mean, it was such a nightmare. It was just one thing after the other. And it's really, really difficult to keep a level head during when something like that's going on.
So let me go back through the timeline again. So it was 2 years for the time for them to foreclose, and then you fought them another 9 months and you got it reversed. Is that correct?
Right, right.
Okay. So it was a 3-year process. Oh my goodness. And and you were doing everything right in the beginning. They had made a mistake.
Exactly. It all started with basically an accounting error that should have been very easy to fix. And they, you know, once I sent in the proof, they said, "Oh sure, you know, we'll research, we'll find these, everything will be fine." And it just really went downhill from there.
And how much did you spend on lawyer fees?
You know, we spend tens of thousands of dollars. And in the end, the one good thing that came out of that is that I feel like I got a really quick education. You know, they gave me a lot of information that I wouldn't have had otherwise. The downside to that was, you know, it's difficult for me to – there are certain times when you definitely need to hire an attorney because you have to have legal advice. But in these types of situations, most people who are facing foreclosure don't have any extra money to hire an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the legal system is that – you know, attorneys don't continue to get paid unless there's ongoing litigation, unless there's something going on. So it's not necessarily, you know, in their best interest to solve things in a timely fashion. And they tend to burn through money really quickly. So we did pay a lot of money to a couple different attorneys, and that didn't really get us anywhere, like I said, except for the fact that, you know, I did get a lot of knowledge and insight into what was going on.
So you got the information, but you're the one that actually resolved the whole situation. Is that not correct?
Right. In the end, it wasn't because – exactly. In the end, it was because of the letter that I wrote to the CEO. I wish that I had gotten to that point, you know, sooner in the process. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not the way it turned out.
And so then you were able to actually keep your house.
Right.
And did everything get corrected? And did you get – because, I mean, we all know with mortgage payments, right, when you pay your payments – as it goes through, your interest, how much you owe, and goes down. So was that all finally gone back and gone through?
I have to say that in the end, once I got in touch with the higher-ups at the mortgage company, once they got involved, they really, really did the right thing. They did right by me. They corrected all of the mistakes. They took away all of the fees. They lowered the interest rate. I mean, they really, really took care of us in the end. So, you know, that's a happy ending to my story. I was really happy that they were accountable and took responsibility, and really, I felt like, just really took care of us in the end.
So how'd you get into the CEO? How'd you get the letter to them?
I just researched. I went online and started researching, okay, who's the CEO? And I also sent one to the chief financial officer. I sent one to the director of media relations, and then I sent one to the board of directors also. So it was just some online research, and I found the address, and I sent it overnight mail, so I would, you know, know that it got there, and it got there, and like I said, within 48 hours, I had a response, and I was shocked, because honestly, I didn't expect to hear anything back, you know, because, this, you know, you feel like you get lost in the system, and there's so much of this going on right now. But yeah, they responded.
Wow. This is Corinne Motokaitis of How She Really Does It, and I'm talking with advocate Amy Founder, Amy Jackson. And so what are some tips that you would recommend for the listeners out there if they're going through foreclosure and how to survive foreclosure?
You know, it's a really difficult process. My biggest thing is that the first thing you need to do is really assess your situation and figure out what's going on. You know, they're announcing all these new plans and programs to help homeowners. But it's been my experience and clients that I've been dealing with that a lot of times the hardest thing for them to do is really be honest about their situation and where they're at and can they afford to be in the home. Because, I mean, it's difficult. Like I said before, this is your home. This is where your family lives. It's difficult to let go of that. There's an emotional attachment there. So the first thing you need to do is sit down and be honest. You know, can we afford to stay in this property? And if you can, then you need to immediately figure out who is the lien holder, not who... People oftentimes think that who you send your payments to, that's who your mortgage company is. And 9 times out of 10, that's not true. Most banks and mortgage companies have an independent third party who they call servicing agents, and they're the people who take care of your loan in terms of, customer service issues. So they take your payments. You can contact them if you have general questions about the mortgage, and then sometimes they are authorized to do loan modifications, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the first thing that I would say, that you just need to get a handle on your finances in general, figure out can you afford to be there, and then if you can't, take appropriate action. And either way, though, you really the very first step is to figure out who holds the lien to your property.
And so you find out who holds the lien to your property, and then what do you do?
I say, particularly because of what's going on right now, if you're really desperate, you know, you can put in an initial phone call to your servicing agent if that helps. It's been my experience, like I said, with my clients that I'm dealing with. Most recently I'm calling in, and it's sometimes I just get a voicemail and they'll say, do not call back. You know, we will return your call. It's taking an average of 7 to 14 days to return your phone call, just to return an initial phone call. So if that's the kind of response you get, then you need to say, okay, we're going to cut through the third party, and we're going to go directly to the mortgage company. And so you contact the mortgage company directly. And, you know, probably initially you'll get some sort of entry-level customer service person, and if you don't get the response or the answers that you feel like you need to be getting, then you continue on up the chain of command until you do, until you get somebody who is in a position to affect change who can really, you know, do the loan modification or do the refinance or whatever you're trying to accomplish, and you start to see results. Don't let anybody give you the runaround.
Oh, okay. Before we go to that point, you had mentioned earlier, too, that you need to decide, can we afford to stay in this house or can we not?
Right.
So if you can afford to stay in this house, is that when you say, okay, I need to go and find who owns my lien?
Exactly.
Okay. And then if you decide we cannot afford to stay in this house, what do we do?
Then it's, you know, you have, it depends how far along in the process you are. You have a couple of options. You can contact, you know, you still contact the mortgage company and say, look, I realize that I'm behind. I'm not going to be able to pay. We cannot afford to stay here. Can you work with me so that I can put my house up for sale? You know, try to do anything, reach out to do anything you can to avoid the actual foreclosure itself. If you can avoid that, that would be fantastic. And in the meantime, you need to start looking for another place to live, obviously. So the good news for people who are being foreclosed on right now are that there are many landlords out there, you know, people who have built homes, built, invested in property, et cetera, who have vacancies. They're vacant, and they need to fill these things up. So they're much more lenient and understanding when it comes to your credit and foreclosure issues. And in many communities, they have local resources where different realtors work specifically with landlords who are accommodating people with foreclosure, where most oftentimes they don't even look at your credit. Maybe they'll ask for a little bit extra for a deposit, but you need to find a place to live, and renting is pretty much going to be your only option if you are, you know, in a foreclosure situation.
Okay. And then when you do call the lien company, what are the types of, what's the kind of information that you're looking for? What, when you go to that entry-level person, what is it that you're asking and what is it that you're looking for?
You need to ask them, like I said, you see, when you call the mortgage company, you explain your situation. And my advice to people is that the more that you put in writing, the better. So even, you know, when you contact them, you figure, okay, whoever you speak with, you need to get their name. And you document that, and then you send a letter saying, here are my circumstances, you know, my spouse lost a job, somebody in my family's ill, here's why we're not being able to make the payments on time. You want that documented. You want it dated, signed, and you want a hard copy of it. So you send that in to them. And so you explain to the person on the phone, here's what I'm going through. Is there a program that you're offering that I qualify for? And at that time, they should take your information, your financial information, what's been going on, and they will let you know if you qualify for a program. Now, sometimes they will tell you that you don't when you really do. And that's part of, you know, my frustration with this industry and what's going on right now, is that these people are announcing all these programs to help people, and so consumers are calling, you know, with their hopes high, and there isn't any real bottom line for them, so it's basically at their discretion whether or not they want to use this money to help you or not. So it's very, very difficult, and I just say that you have to persevere, and if that person, the entry-level person, says, no, we can't help you, then you go up the chain of command. Then you say, okay, well, I want to speak to your manager. And you continue up, do as much research as you can to figure out who the higher-up people in the company are, and just until you get somebody who can give you answers, and like I said, it's in a position to affect change, do not stop.
And you had said you had, you know, you had knew what the procedures were, what the legal procedures were in Texas. So what does somebody do? Like, they don't have the money, like you, and you made a really good point. A lot of times when you're going through foreclosure, you don't have the money to hire an attorney. So where can people go to find out this information of what is the right process? What is the correct process? Is this company following the process?
Well, you can always go to your county courthouse and you can speak to somebody there to find out what the procedural guidelines are in your specific, you know, in your state. Also, the internet, of course, is a great resource. Many states have, you know, all of their government agencies online. You can find out a lot of stuff that way as well. The Attorney General's office, you know, you can contact them if you feel like you have been defrauded in any way in terms of your mortgage and what's going on. They're a good resource. So there are definitely local resources in every community. So I would say start at your, you know, your city government. Go to your county courthouse. If you have to, go to the Attorney General's office. But the internet is definitely a very good resource to use.
So it's really important to get educated, and then there are free resources out there, part of our government, that
exactly
can help you.
Right.
And then you just have to be tenacious.
Exactly.
This is Karen Motokaitis, and I am speaking with Advocate Amy, founder Amy Jackson, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. What are the likely outcomes if they get a hold of the lenders or the lien people? What are the likely outcomes that can occur? Is it possible to actually save, be able to stay in your home?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the good news for homeowners as well is that these banks and, you know, mortgage companies are pretty much just as desperate to keep homeowners in their homes as the homeowners are. They're bleeding money, and it makes sense for them to keep people in their homes as opposed to spending, you know, in Texas alone, the cost of a foreclosure, what it costs a mortgage company on average to do a foreclosure is between $55,000 and $60,000. And then after they take the home back, you have to figure in today's market, how long is the home just going to sit there until, you know, so it just makes more sense for them to keep you in the property. So that's the good news. And I've seen them, when you contact them, if you are in a position financially where you can still afford to be in the home, they have lowered interest rates. They'll lengthen the term of your mortgage. In some cases, I've even seen them reassess the home at current market value and modify the loan to those specifications as opposed to, so, you know, it makes up the difference. Mm-hmm. So you're not, so deficient in your mortgage. So they're doing they really want to do it. The problem is that they're so inundated with so many people, and there's just file after file after file is getting individual attention to actually get something done.
And so what are the causes right now of the foreclosures?
What are the causes?
Yeah, I can speculate. Well, there's the recession, people losing their jobs. There's always, you know, somebody with going through a medical expense. And then some of my, I guess one of my other things would be, you know, people who got into no principal, just interest only loans, and now
right, that's the prime thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, it's a combination of all those things. I mean, clearly the subprime thing, I think, was, you know, the major thing, and then. So, you know, these notes are coming due now because they signed an interest only for 2 to 3 or 5 years, and so now the interest rates are skyrocketing, and the economy isn't doing well. People are losing jobs left and right, so there's loss of income. So it's a combination of those things, and the problem is that, you know, these things are going to continue for a while. It's going to continue to get worse before it gets better. So that's why I think it's really important for people to get a good, honest handle on where they're at so that they can prepare and be in a, you know, you want to be in a position where you don't want to be stressed out. You need to be as comfortable as you can be, and you want to make sure that you provide a stable environment for yourself and for your family. So.
And so, like, with the subprime stuff, are the banks, like, changing some of the terms of the loans where all of a sudden people were going, okay, we could barely just make it with the no, you know, the just the interest only loans. And then, so is that one of the areas that their banks are trying to make accommodations to keep the people in the homes?
Right. They're fixing, they're giving them, in a lot of cases, they're lowering interest rates, and then it's a fixed interest rate. So, okay. You know, it's not going to go up in 5 years. This is what your payment's going to be. This is where you're going to be at. So, and that's the thing, though. You have to make sure, if they're going to do that, they want to make sure that you qualify for it and that you can really stay in the property.
Okay. This is Karen Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. And today I'm talking with Amy Jackson, and we are discussing foreclosures. So, Amy, can you talk to me about the Obama's plan?
Sure. Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of press lately about, you know, all this money that's flooding into, you know, that's being set aside for these mortgage reworks and for people to refinance their homes, et cetera, et cetera. And while I think the intention behind all of this new legislation is admirable, I'm not really seeing it come into effect yet. The thing that people don't realize is that, you know, there many months ago even there was, you know, money that was given back to these banks so that they would refinance people's homes, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, what consumers don't realize is that there's no bottom line for the banks. It's kind of at their discretion, and nobody's keeping tabs on them. So while in some cases now they're saying that they're going to provide a financial incentive, let's say, to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, So they provide the financial incentive, but if you think about it, if it's the independent third party, the servicing agent, right, that's trying to do some of these loan modifications, they're not the bank. It's just an employee who's working. This is their 9-to-5 job, and there's not really an incentive for them to make sure that this happens for people. So my problem with all this stuff is that there needs to be more regulation, there needs to be a bottom line, there needs to be a uniform plan, and I feel like, you know, there needs to be some accountability on the part of these lenders. They have to, like, look, you have to do X amount of these modifications. You have to do X amount of these refinances. Somebody has to be accountable, and I don't see where that's happening.
And, well, now, what about, because some people, you know, when you start hearing, like, some people have been, and I've heard other radio shows, where some people are calling in and they're really upset because they feel like, well, I followed the rules and I didn't take out too much debt and now I'm not getting helped, but other people are getting helped. What's your response to something like that?
I get the frustration. I understand it. And that's the thing, is that it's almost like a lottery. It's kind of like hit or miss. That's why I say you are always your own best advocate, and you know your situation and circumstances better than anybody else, and you care about yourself and your family more than anybody else will. So you need to fight for your rights. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, one person can call in and they'll get a response. They'll get somebody will take action on their behalf. They'll get the results that they want and need. And the next person will call in who deserves just as much help, and they don't get the response, or they're met with roadblock after roadblock. So that's the. I mean, it's really, really frustrating to be in this position right now.
And does Obama's plan, is it really helping people? Because originally with the first the bank bailout back in the fall, a lot of criticism was like, well, look, it's not helping people. It's helping the banks and it's helping, you know, the upper executives. And then there's been the whole AIG fallout many times now, whether,
right,
you know, going to San Diego or now these bonuses and stuff. So, but, it, you know, how is this helping the people that are hurting?
And exactly. You know, I have a real problem with the fact that, you know, it's been reported that specifically Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're going to be offered financial incentives, and they're pouring a ton of money into them to rework these loans, et cetera, et cetera. And there's something fundamentally wrong about rewarding the people, the very people who got us into this mess in the first place. You know, I just don't think that that's necessarily the best way to go about it. And of course, I mean, the people who perpetuated this in the first place are going to initially profit from it. I think that if we can figure out some kind of regulation and some kind of integrated approach, some kind of plan where everybody's held to the same standard, then it can help the people. But as somebody who's working with homeowners, dealing with their mortgage companies, still, I can tell you that it's a very frustrating process, and I don't see any difference now than I did, you know, 6 months ago.
So when you said it was banks are willing to work with people when they're going through this foreclosure process, you've seen that happen. Are you saying that it's not necessarily because of the bailout, but it's because of the cost to the banks themselves as far as how much it costs to foreclose a property and how much it's just going to cost them because homes aren't being sold right now?
So right. It's about their bottom line, clearly. Because when I started my process, you know, we were just sort of at the tip of the iceberg. And then the last year when they actually foreclosed, that's when things really started hitting, when you know, people started realizing, oh, my gosh, you know, we're in the middle of a housing crisis. This is really getting bad. And a lot of the things in my specific case spoke to all the issues that are going on right now. So I really think it has more to do with the bottom line and the banks than it has to do with the bailout right now. We'll see. You know, we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic. Let's say that.
Okay. And so once people do go through the foreclosure, say they go through the foreclosure and they do get evicted, what now?
Right. You know, you need to reach out to family. You need to reach out. There are, you know, many local resources in everybody's individual communities that are dedicating to helping people. You know, that's another one of those things where they're extremely overwhelmed because there's so many people facing this very issue. So But there are definitely local community resources. And like I said, there's a lot of there are realtors in every community that are working with landlords, and they're much more sympathetic and realizing, you know, what's happening with this housing crisis, and are willing to help people and make exceptions. So you just need to get into a place, and that after going through something so traumatic, I can tell you that it puts a different perspective on things, and you realize what's really important, and your peace of mind and your well-being is more important than where you live and, you know, what kind of house you're living in. So you just need to reach out to as many people as you can, stay close to your family, get as much support as you can, and, you know, try to hang in there. It's a really tough thing.
When you talk about landlords making exceptions, what do you mean?
Well, you know, usually landlords are pretty strict. You know, they run a credit report. You have to have a certain credit score. You have to put first and last month's rent in addition to a security deposit. And a lot of times now, landlords aren't requiring credit checks. You know, or if they do the credit check, you're much more lenient than they were before. They're waiving deposit fees. They're waiving sometimes first and last month's rent. In some cases, they're letting people go on a month-to-month basis as opposed to having to sign a long-term lease. So they're definitely trying to work with people. There are people out there that are, you know, recognizing that this is a problem and wanting to do something to help.
You know, it's interesting because when I was a kid, my dad was he was an inventor, and he had his own company, and his company wound up going bankrupt. And I think it was like 1985, and then our house, we actually, this is the first time I've ever said this on air, but our house went into foreclosure. We lost our home and stuff, and we wound up moving out of the town and up to another area because my dad was going to go back into mortgage banking and not do his other career. And we were able to find a place to rent, and, you know, it wasn't the end of the world. I mean, it was harder, but maybe it was a connection or whatever, but my parents were able to, I mean, we transitioned. I mean, I don't know how, because I was just a kid at the time. I was like 12. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just remember leaving the house, and we were moving to another place in another town, and it worked. And then from there, you know, my parents found other places. So I guess the whole reason I'm talking about this is that I want people to realize that there are possibilities. You just have to be willing to put yourself out there and say, you know, times aren't really good for us right now. Do you know of anybody who might? And I don't know how my parents found this place. I know at one point later on when we moved back to the Bay Area, one of my dad's friends had this condo, and we wound up living there for a few months for free, you know.
Right.
And I'm sure pride-wise it wasn't like my dad's happiest moment in his life, but our family was able to stay together. We were healthy. You know, we still had food on the table. We had a roof over our heads. And then we eventually got into, you know, our permanent housing situation. It
exactly.
did take some time. And, you know, and I, you know, so, and there was, you know, there were huge stigmas with bankruptcy and stuff. But again, it was about, okay, this is where we are and accepting that. And, but I still have a family to provide for, and what can we do?
Yes, and you can always rebuild. You can always rebuild. And that's the thing, you know, that's so frustrating and makes me so sad when I deal with you know, some of my clients, is that there is still such a social stigma attached to foreclosure. Even with everybody, you know, in our country realizing that this is a huge problem and people are going through this, people want to hide it, and they don't want to reach out, and they're afraid of what people are going to think. And I'm so happy that you shared that story, because that speaks to the fact that if you rally around and if you strip down to what's really most important in life, you know, it's your family and it's the people that are close to you, and it's making sure that everybody's safe and healthy. And no matter what happens to you, you can always rebuild. You can always, you know, move forward. So there is hope at the end of this process.
No, there is. And I mean, you know, again, that was the first time I've ever publicly told that story. And I don't think many people do know that story, but because there was a lot of shame in that. And,
right.
You know, we went and we tried this new area out for like 6 months. And then my parents were like, it's too hot, because it's actually not too far from here. It was in Sacramento. And so we went back to the Bay Area. I think we lived with my aunt for a bit, so we had family. And then we had the condo for a few months. My parents got themselves settled. My dad started a new business again, going back to his inventing and manufacturing and stuff. And you know, and then it became a successful business. And I mean, you know, I have a lot of entrepreneur guests that come on my show too. And they talk about, you know, a lot of times on the way to success, there's failures or things happen in life. And if people can understand that without the judgment or the stigma, that, you know, maybe we made some mistakes, maybe we did this, or maybe somebody got sick, or, you know, somebody lost their job. It doesn't mean, it's not a reflection of who you are as a person. These are situational things.
Exactly.
And how can we get back on our feet to move forward? You know, and sometimes you have to, sometimes, you know, I find people who I interview who've lost everything, and then that's when they finally figure out who they are.
Exactly. And like I said, once you really get stripped down like that, you realize what is really important. And I think that's, you know, that was another lesson even for me in dealing with this, is that you get to the point when you realize that you're, you know, I mean, we were literally less than a week away from being homeless. And I wasn't smart about it at the time, didn't have a backup plan, because I just kept thinking, this is so wrong. Somebody's going to see how wrong this is, and this is going to get turned around at some point. But I remember when I was writing that letter that night, just thinking, you know what? Either way, what happens when this is done, I don't care. I just want peace of mind. That's all I want. That's what's most important to me. I just want to have peace of mind, and I want to feel like, you know, I can handle the day without any surprises, knocks on the doors, phone calls. I don't want to have to worry about this stuff anymore. So unfortunately, sometimes it takes stuff like this to happen to make people realize these things. But, you know, like I said, there definitely is hope. There's always, you can always rebuild.
Yeah, you can. And to realize that, because, you know, I know in certain parts of California, we have so many foreclosures that are going on. And then there's, I mean, in my little town, which I feel like we live in a bubble, it's in a pretty affluent town with it. We have a university in town, and then we have the state government, a lot of state government employees and a lot of professionals. So we tend not to, you know, it hasn't, I guess, been those industries that have been hit as hard
right.
as some other ones. But there's still foreclosures that are happening, you know, and if our community can embrace that and say, okay, you know, let's not pass judgment on these people, or this is what they did. Who knows what the circumstances are, because we never really know what goes on behind closed doors.
Exactly.
You know, and realize that we're all a community. We're all connected. And if we can do that, then that I think can help people really help rebuild their own lives, you know, instead of wallowing in the shame of what has transpired.
Exactly. That's, you know, and that's the message that I try to get out to people, is that we need to be rallying around these people, because they need your support, not your judgment. And it's very easy to do that, to judge people, and that's a dangerous thing to do, because you never know what's going to happen. Sometimes things, you know, I think I've had a lot of friends recently who lost jobs, and Austin, I'm in Austin, mm-hmm. and we're in a little bit of a bubble here too, because mm-hmm. it's the same thing, you know, there's the government here, it's the state capital, and the University of Texas. So, you know, there have been foreclosures here, but it's not, you know, we haven't been devastated in the same way as other parts of the country have. And so I just, you know, but I do have some friends who've had a spouse that's lost a job, things have happened, and they, you know, it's like a wake-up call to realize, oh, you know, this can happen to me too. And you would hope that if you're ever in that position, that there's somebody there to offer you support and compassion. So
yeah, because you just never know what's going to happen. And I think, if anything, I hope we've all learned this from this recession, is that nothing is guaranteed, and we just don't know.
That is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I was reading, actually, the New York Times had this article out, because a lot of times, you know, people think, oh, if you're a professor and you've got this lifelong, you know, contract or whatever. But I was reading in the New York Times the other day, and they were talking about how some institutions are getting rid of departments. You know, they're just saying, we can't have all these departments, or we can't have all these faculty positions, so we're either not going to fill them, or, you know,
right.
So there's some changes in, oh, what we thought were guarantees, are things are changing.
Yep.
And to be prepared, because you may be, you know, having judgment like, oh, well, you know, you just need to go get a job, or you need to do some work. But again, we just don't know.
And exactly.
And that's so important. I'm talking with foreclosure expert and founder of Advocate Amy, Amy Jackson, and her mission is to help others going through foreclosure process. This is Corinne Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. So, Amy, tell us before we go a little bit about your organization.
Sure. It's called Advocate Amy, and I founded it this past fall in September, October, and it's basically a nonprofit that's dedicated to aiding people who are being affected by the housing crisis. in any way, but it's most specifically, you know, to aid people who are facing foreclosure. If they're, you know, about to, if their spouse or loved one has just lost a job or become ill and they know they're about to become behind on their payments, or if they're in the middle of the foreclosure process, or even like my situation, which is not as rare as you would think, a wrongful foreclosure type situation, I'm basically there to give them information, guide them through the process, let them know what they can expect, and also just be a sounding board, just be somebody who, you know, knows, because I've been there, I know what it feels like to be in the middle of all of it, and so, you know, any type of support that I can provide, that's what I want to do.
Now, do you deal with clients in just the state of Texas, or do you deal with them throughout the...
No, the whole country, yeah. I actually have more clients out of Texas than I do in Texas, so... Yeah, I can help anybody in the United States. I can help.
And what are the kind of costs that are associated with this?
My services are free. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's no charge.
Wow. That's a tremendous thing that you're providing for others.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, it's been a learning experience for me to try to figure out how to balance it all, but when I first started it, you know, it was this thing where how am I going to, you know, because at some point I have to be compensated for my time, but it just came down to I cannot, you know, people who are losing their homes, losing everything, I can't in good conscience, you know, say, okay, now give me, you know, $500, so I'll do this for you. Like, I couldn't do it. So yeah, that's the way it needs to happen. And that's the other thing that I wanted to mention, that people need to be very suspicious and leery of anybody who says that they, you know, there's guaranteed I can help you save your home, you know, pay me X amount of dollars. First of all, there's no guarantee, especially with what's going on right now. And second of all, you can do this all for free on your own, so anybody that's charging you to do it, you don't need to do that. Do not pay somebody else who tells you that they can, you know, help you save your home.
And do you have information on your website about, like, the steps, kind of what we talked about today, of what somebody needs to do?
Right, yeah, there's my story, and there's some pointers, some things to look out for, and, you know, there's some information, and I'm in the process of revamping the whole website, so there's going to be a lot more information and different stuff on there soon as well, but yes, there's some pointers and stuff there now.
And we'll have a link to Amy's website. Actually, I think it's on our website right now, but when the podcast, this show goes up on our website, there'll be another link to Amy's website, too, for those of you that are listening and want to take a look at information or find ways to get in touch with her. So what is your end goal for Advocate Amy?
You know, it's changed even since in the past few months. Like right now, my goal is to really shine a spotlight on this industry and sort of the fraud and the corruption and all of the pieces that are missing, essentially. I can, you know, provide the perspective of somebody who's been through it, who's been through the process, and who knows what it feels like to be on the other side. So, you know, I would like to, right now, I would say that my end goal is to do that, to affect some kind of change to this industry and to make sure that the appropriate people are held accountable and that consumers are ultimately protected and that people's rights are not being violated.
Wow. And, this is Corinne Motokaitis, and I'm wrapping up our discussion with Amy Jackson, founder of Advocate Amy. You're listening to Corinne Motokaitis on How She Really Does It. Now, when you have these clients that you're helping throughout the country, what are things that you do?
Basically, you know, when somebody first contacts me, I speak with them about, you know, we get very detailed about their situation, and as an objective third party, I give them, you know, sort of my take on what's going on, whether or not they should, whether I think they can afford to be in the property, or perhaps if they should start, you know, looking at other options. And then I sort of talk them through the process and say, you know, look, here are your options. Either you can, you know, start taking action on your behalf, which is really helpful for some people and very empowering because, you know, they feel like they've been beaten down and they don't know what to do. And once they get, you know, knowledge is power. So once they get information and, you know, they really would prefer to handle it on their own. Some people are so overwhelmed and are dealing with other personal circumstances and they want me to go to bat for them with the mortgage company. So in those cases, then they fax in an authorization to allow me to negotiate with their mortgage company. And I start that process, and then we just go from there.
Wow, and you do all this for free.
Yes.
So do you have a? Do you have a? Are you? Do you, are you trying to figure out ways to get compensated eventually at some point?
Right. Yeah. I'm working on it now. I just actually finished up this really great business plan that I'm really proud of, and there have been people who've expressed interest in funding the nonprofit. So that looks like that's right around the corner. So yeah, I mean, I think it's going to all work out. The way that it's all come together, it's sort of like one of those meant to be things. So
we need a section of the bailout plan to go to people like you, the organizations that are helping people with the foreclosure process.
I know, right?
Instead of these trips to spas or whatever.
Yeah, the spa trips and the million-dollar bonuses and. For the people who perpetuated the problem to begin with, I know.
I have a question for you because this is current news, and I don't usually talk too much about current news, but the current news with this week with AIG and the $100 million or the bonuses and stuff, what are your thoughts on that? Should the government intervene or should they just let it be?
You know, that's such a difficult question. It's like, you know, the story of the past few months is like the government is intervening everywhere. And they, you know, so they kind of intervened to save some of these people. So I almost feel like, yeah, like there should be, how can they be allowed to get away with this? There's got to be some accountability there. It's insane that there's this much money and there are these million-dollar bonuses when they have lost all this money. I mean, so part of me feels like, yeah, there's been enough government intervention the other way that they need, you know, they need to put a stop to this. But then at some point you figure, okay, how much can the government continue to intervene until that becomes a problem? You know, I mean, it's like we're walking this really fine line, and it's sometimes it's hard to figure out which side of the line you should be standing on.
Well, it was interesting because I was going to write a blog about just leadership, and I've thought a lot about this, and there was a good piece in the New York Times again earlier in the week about how much the government does intervene, and you know, it's going to cause lack of trust with corporations and
right.
And so on and so forth, and that made really good sense. But then at the same time, I also feel that there's, you know, what about leadership? And what about the people that created this mess taking responsibility, you know, to whom
exactly.
Much is given, much is expected. And, you know, yeah, there are contracts out there, but there's also a sense of responsibility. Yeah, you may have had this contract, but in the end, did you really do your job? Did you not? You know, and then I think there's also been a good social outcry that's been going on where, you know, it's, things have been taken a look at. And so I was thinking, well, you know, the CEO should definitely turn back the money. Well, then I soon found out that the CEO is only being paid a dollar and was just put into the situation. So a lot of the top people, but it would be really nice if a lot of the people, and you know, we don't know all the people's circumstances. And I know there are people that work for AIG that are leveraged out and that can't afford things and their own lifestyles too. But, you know, people would turn back and say, you know what, these aren't the times to be taking the money because, you know, we messed up. You know?
Exactly.
And there's also a difference, I think, between bonuses and commission, too.
Yep.
And I don't know how much, like, you know, it's so muddled where and people, nobody really knows what's going on, that we don't know how much, is it bonus money or is it commission money?
Right.
The understanding is that the bonuses are because of retention. There was a mess. They realized this, so they gave them these, okay, stay to help clean up this mess that you made, and we'll give you these bonuses.
I know, it's just so, that's the thing, I mean, it's so crazy, even the reasoning behind it all, and I think that, you know, there just needs to be personal responsibility. Every single person involved, every employee, every CEO, every higher up, every middle, anybody there, you know what you did to contribute to that, and so, you know, it's just all about personal accountability. Whatever you need to do to right that wrong, that's what needs to happen, in my opinion, and
it's leadership, it's integrity, and it's ethics.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons that, you know, I keep looking at this recession and I think it's kind of a, I've just lost the word that I use, but it's like a market correction because we were getting so grand. I mean, you know, and so grand and so entitled about just how much we're willing to spend and, oh, we've got to spend more for this and, oh, we deserve this and, oh, we deserve that. And, you know, I'm 36 and I'm going, God, my lifestyle is a lot better. I mean, obviously than my parents were, but even still like, or even like my husband who grew up in the stable family, his dad was an engineer, right? And I look at our lifestyle and I go, wow, we just have this incredible lifestyle, and we live so much less than most of the people that we know.
Right.
But, you know, so I feel like a lot of this is a market correction about, you know, we were just getting really out of control.
Unrealistic expectations. expectations.
Definitely. Well, Amy, it has been a pleasure to talk with you, and you're doing what a great service that you're providing for people out there. And again, like I said, we'll have a link to Amy's website on our website. We have one right now, but when we put the podcast, it'll continue to be up there. So for those of you that need it, find out more information or get some help with your foreclosures, or if you have a family or friend, you can always point them in that direction. So thank you very much, Amy, for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've had Amy Jackson. She is the founder of the nonprofit advocacy organization Advocate Amy. This is Karen Motokaitis, and thanks for listening to How She Really Does It on KDRT LP 95.7 FM.